Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening. I am so glad to have you with me here tonight. Tonight we have a good show, and our show tonight will be featuring two lovely ladies, Debbie Gerwitz and Erin King, and they are partners in Destination Canines, which is a dog training organization, and they train dogs for service as service dogs, and they also, from what I understand, help owner trainers to train dogs, and we're going to talk to them about what they're doing, where they're doing it, how they're doing it, and how to make the best of their services. So, one at a time, ladies, we're going to ask Deb if you'll introduce yourself, and then we'll let Erin introduce herself, and in between the two of you, we want to introduce your company. So, go ahead, Deb.
So, as you mentioned, my name is Debbie. I run a company called Destination Canine, in part with Erin. I am a disabled service dog handler myself, and my service dog is Sherlock, the standard poodle, and he is typically very fun colors. So, a lot of people may know me from the community through just my dog.
Okay, and Erin, you want to give your little blurb?
Yes, I'm Erin, as you heard, and I also am a disabled service dog handler as well as a trainer of over 15 years now. And my service dog's name is Goose. He's a Belgian Malinois, almost 3 years old now.
Okay, Erin, somehow, some way, we're getting an echo with you, so I'm not sure if it's because you're on speakerphone and you're close to Debbie, or if the computer that you're looking at is on, but maybe on your end you can work on that and see if we can't get it fixed so that we don't have an echo.
Okay.
Okay. Erin, while we're trying to make sure that you are coming across without the echo, do you yourself have a service dog?
Yes, I do. I have a Belgian Malinois, approximately 3 years old, and his name is Goose. And he helps me with my mobility because I have a condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder. And it causes my joints to be hyperflexible. So I dislocate and have muscle soreness a lot. And he helps me with picking up objects, as well as bracing to help me off the ground. And he's starting to do wheelchair work for days that I have wheelchairs.
Okay, great. And you might have said some of that, but being distracted, did not catch it. But all right, we're going to let whichever one of you decides you want to. Tell us about your organization and how people might be able to get in touch with you.
So we started our organization when we met through a local service dog meetup group. We would hold events and kind of hang out and get to know other handlers in the area. We kind of got to talking and discovered that we had very similar training styles and ideals for what a service dog should be. We definitely have a need in our area for experienced trainers. Being from San Antonio, it's basically Military City, USA. We have a lot of people in the area who are former military who have been trying to find a dog to help them out, but either haven't because of long wait lists or cost or just other various obstacles. So our goal is to move and be ahead of the obstacles so that we can provide a dog to everyone in need as they need it. So that's kind of how Destination Canine was born, was we saw the need and we wanted to fill the need. We wanted to make sure that everybody who needs a service dog would have access to a service dog.
Interesting.
So,
go ahead.
Yes. No, I was just going to say, so the best way to contact us right now is on Facebook. We're facebook.com/destinationk9, K and then the number 9. We also have a website with a similar address, so you can find us on our website, or you can always give us a call. We're always available to discuss your needs and exactly what you would like from a service dog. So we try to be as available as possible to help everybody who needs our assistance.
Okay, now, you guys train service dogs. Do you also breed service dogs?
At this time, we do not. Our current method of getting service dogs is we try to partner with local rescues. Our area has a huge issue with pets that are stray or homeless, so we try to help out in that aspect, too. So we try to find a lot of suitable rescue dogs that can be trained and turned into service dogs. If for some reason we can't find a suitable service dog from our local rescues, then we go through very reputable breeders to make sure that we're getting high-quality puppies that can be raised and have a good potential to become service dogs.
Okay, that's great and wonderful. So you're not breed-specific in any kind of way?
No, we are not. We do each personally have our preferences. We always joke, I like the floppy-eared dogs. I like poodles and labs and goldens, where Aaron likes the pointy-eared dogs like shepherds and Malinois. So we kind of always joke about that. But we do not pick a specific breed. We have preferred breeds, but we'll work with almost any breed as long as the dog itself is suitable to become a service dog.
Okay. Let's play a little game, because
okay.
I like games. Let's
okay.
say that I am there in Fort Sam, Houston, and I am getting out of the military, and I have just come back from overseas, and let's say I've got PTSD. And a family that I'm about to lose because I can't manage my PTSD. And somehow or another, I get in touch with you guys because I heard that you guys do service dogs, and I heard that a service dog can help me with my PTSD. Talk to me about how you would talk to me if I was that person.
So one of the first things we start would be we need to ask you about why you're interested in a service dog and in what way do you think that a service dog can assist you the most. So that answer tends to vary. So once we know kind of the ideal behind it, some people come into this having done tons of research and they know exactly what they want. And we have other clients who are like, I just heard about this. It sounds great. I need more information. So we kind of help with both sides. So if somebody has an idea of what they want, a lot of times we'll work with them on their breed choices and their tasks and stuff like that that they've already researched. So if they don't know anything about service dogs, we kind of start out with a little bit of information about service dogs. Service dogs are trained to mitigate a disability. They cannot be aggressive. They must be housebroken and under control in public. And they cannot just provide comfort. So we look for people who are interested in that description of a service dog, that they want the companionship, but they also have a need for the tasks that a dog can do. So one of the most common tasks that we train for PTSD is blocking, or the command we like to give is on my six. So the dog will watch behind you or behind our veteran before somebody can walk up, and it helps with a lot of the hypervigilance and takes it down to a more manageable level than if they were trying to navigate on their own. So we'll start typically with a block, and then we can add any kind of tasks in that the person may be interested in, like deep pressure therapy for anxiety attacks, alerting to people walking up, clearing a room, finding the exit. See, the options are endless once we have an idea of what symptoms actually affect you or our veteran in this case, and what the dog can do to help that out the most. So once we have decided, you know, what kind of tags, what we really need, we're going to start the selection process for a dog. And our selection process goes very in depth. We go above and beyond to make sure that our dogs are going to be able to handle basically any situation you can throw at them. So we start evaluating local dogs in the shelters and trying to find a dog that's going to be a good match based on sometimes its size or sometimes it's a breed preference. We try to match the dogs with the veterans as much as we can. So once we find a suitable dog, that's when kind of the fun begins. We have a couple different options. We either, the dog can come stay with our program and get trained from start to finish, or the dog can go home with the veteran that day, and we support them and provide training assistance and little bits here and there while they do the actual training themselves. It's just a matter of preference and experience. Somebody who has no experience training dogs before, typically a fully trained dog is going to be much better for them. So we want to find what works exactly for each person, and that's one of the greatest things about our program is there's no, this is what we give a veteran with PTSD. These are the options we give so that we can find exactly what they need to really help them succeed in life and hopefully get their life back on track. And, you know, kind of overcome that PTSD through the help of their dog.
Great, great. Now, Erin, I don't want you to go to sleep on us over there. How about you give us a little blurb history of your dog training experience and how you came into dog training?
Oh, not falling asleep at all. I tend to be the behind-the-scenes trainer, and Debbie does a lot of our public relations, so I let her do some of the talking sometimes. But, no, I've been training dogs for over 16 years now. I actually started just out of high school working for a local dog trainer that I apprenticed with, and I've been doing it ever since. Throughout the years, I've learned different techniques and worked with some fabulous trainers from different types of training as well, so not just service dog training, but ring sport training for like German Shepherds, and working with the military for a few years as a military working dog caretaker, trick training, things like that. So I've had a little bit of experience in everything, but I've also done other things besides dog training, such as working for a zoo as a docent. So I like to think that I have my hands in a little bit of everything, and it's given me some great experiences on how to train different types of animals, because all the dogs we have in are going to have different personalities. You know, personally, I chose the service dog route because of being a trainer for so many years, and my disability was getting worse, and so I thought that service dog would be a good option, and because I was able to do the training myself, that's how I kind of fell into it.
That is cool. That's cool. Are you in any of the trainer associations or anything like that?
Currently, don't have my associations right now. A lot of the associations we have are per-fee associations. And so while we are currently working as a company to become ADI recognized, there's a long process with that, including being a nonprofit for a certain number of years as well, which we're working towards right now. But with the training associations, I've done apprenticeships, but again, a lot of the certifications that they have are a per-fee basis, and so rather than going through that, I ended up just doing local apprenticeship.
Okay, that's great. Debbie, on the same line of question, tell us about your history with dog training and segue.
Absolutely. I am a little bit younger than Erin, so I have a little bit more adjusted experience, but I started handling show dogs when I was about 8 years old, and that's really what started my big jump into the dog world. As I got older, I started volunteering for our local Humane Society to offer to train some basic obedience into their dogs before they went out to help increase their adoptability. So we started that way, and then I went on to start training more privately for friends and neighbors, and I started to grow a business based on word of mouth from just the people that I'd worked with in my area. I started my own company in 2013, and ran that for a little while before apprenticing under a service dog trainer to really get the full picture of what service dog training entailed, because it is totally different in so many ways than just pet dog training. So after apprenticing under him for a little while, that is about the time that Aaron and I met and decided to form our own company. So I trained several service dogs already through other companies that I'd worked with and through the trainer that I'd worked with previously. So it was just kind of a natural step for me, with having owned my own company previously, to open a company with somebody who is as passionate as I am about this. So that's kind of how Aaron and I came to be, as towards when I was getting ready to start my own, and it's just been a wonderful journey so far.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Let me ask either one of you, talk a little bit about how you see the differences of owner training and program training, and maybe the strengths and weaknesses of each, and what someone should look for before they make a decision on which way to go.
So we are a hybrid program, is how I like to refer to us. So we have different options. We have fully trained dogs, and then we have our owner trainer support program. Both are wonderful, wonderful programs, and both have great benefits, but they both have some drawbacks too. We decided to start a program because there are so many people out there who may not have experience training a dog, whether it be their pet dog or a service dog, or they may have a disability to the level that they are physically unable to do the training. So they need somebody else who can do it for them. They can do it for them quickly, and who can do it for them at a reasonable cost. So whether it be a physical disability that gets in their way, or one of the things we recommend is, especially with owner trainers, for disabilities like anxiety and bipolar disorder, depression, a lot of the mental illnesses can cause issues as you raise your dog. I have ADHD, anxiety, and depression, and so it was at first kind of a big jump for me to try to train the dog to alert to my symptoms and my moods, and then to do a response without stressing the dog out. One of the great things about dogs is they feed off of our emotions. So it's hard to get them to separate from being so upset by us being upset and just, hey, you're upset and I'm going to work with you. That's a good place for a program to come in, especially if you have a more sensitive dog, because we get that perk of, we know the dog's going to be in tune with you, but we don't want the dog to be stressed out. So that's a big advantage of a program, is that they can work with the dogs without having to worry about having any issues because of a disability getting in the way. While Aaron and myself are both disabled, in our case, it's something that we have learned to work with our disabilities and use it to our advantage. Both of us are involved in training each dog to get a really well-rounded dog. So programs tend to be great for somebody who either doesn't have a lot of time or doesn't have a lot of experience, or just isn't comfortable or physically or is not able to train their dogs. The big advantage to owner training is that it sometimes can be lower cost, but we still recommend working with a trainer as opposed to going at it by yourself. Even though Aaron and I are both experienced, there are times where we'll shoot things off of each other because we need a different set of eyes. We're kind of jaded by our own dogs. You know, we hold our dogs up higher, so sometimes it's nice to have an objective set of eyes to work with you while you're training your dog. And another advantage is the dog is in the home with you from day one, so you bring that dog home and you get to bond and spend time with that dog from the beginning. Sometimes there can be advantages for things like seizure alerts, and we can see if they can pick up naturally, since that's not something we can train. Other times, it's just best to start with the program because it's something that's going to be faster. A professional, we dedicate our entire days. This is all we do is the training. So it's something that we know exactly what needs to be done when to ensure the best chance of success for the dog. So there's a smaller rate of washout, a smaller margin of, little setbacks and stuff as well. with a program versus owner-trained. But, you know, owner-trained does have a lot more flexibility if you're able to train exactly what you need. So you can train exactly what tasks you need and when and how, and it kind of gives a more personalized touch to a dog. So definitely advantages and disadvantages to both, but it just kind of depends on exactly what each handler needs or wants from their service dog in the end.
Okay. Deb, I don't remember if it was you or Aaron that mentioned that, I think it was probably you that mentioned it, that you go with the standard poodles and the golden retrievers and the labs, where Aaron goes with the shepherds and malleons and those kind of things. So that brings me to touch a question about dog training styles. With different dogs, different temperaments, you need different dog training styles. Do you two have comparable styles? I think one of you said that you did. And what is that style of training? And how do you sell me or somebody else on your style of training?
Well, we both do have different preferences for our dogs, but we also have different personalities as well, which every person is going to have. But we do maintain the same training style, which is based on marker training, which is similar to clicker training. Some people may have heard of that before. But we can use our voice instead in order to shape behaviors that turn into tasks. The thing is that there will be some dogs that are more energetic and more engaged, and I do tend to do better with those dogs. Debbie also does better sometimes with the quieter or softer dogs. And so we find there's dogs that matches our personalities better. That person may take over training a little bit more. Or if there's a client also that happens to be a little bit softer in personality, Debbie might deal better with that client. And if there's a more energetic person, someone who likes to joke or things like that, you know, I may handle them better. So we try to make sure that the client gets exactly what they need. But that's also part of the selection of picking the right dog as well. If a client is quieter, we'll make sure that, you know, that we find a lower energy dog for that person. If the person's a jogger but may have PTSD, for example, we want to get a more energetic breed. But the training style that we use can work for any dog. Marker training gets the dog excited about working. They're engaged. They're wanting to learn something new. And the process actually teaches the dogs the process of thinking and process of elimination and trying new things. Think about traditional training that some people might call crank and yank training or the Kohler method, is that it really teaches the dog to submit rather than think out a problem, which is the opposite of what we want for our service dog. So we want to make sure that the dog is engaged and happy and wants to work, and our method really encourages that.
I like the way you put that. That sells me, which is what I asked for you to do, and you did it very well. Let's see. All right. As you come in contact with different people who may, their conditions might have changed and they've gotten to the point to where they're needing more than an emotional support dog or more than a pet dog, and now they're needing a service dog, what is your position on retraining the pet dog or the emotional support dog for service dog?
We are very selective in our process before we begin training a dog. One of the things that we hold as very important to our core values is that the dog is stable in temperament, is non-aggressive, and that it's not stressful for the dog. Unfortunately, quite a few dogs that have been either pets or ESAs in the home their entire life don't fit the bill. But on that same note, we have quite a few that do. So as long as the dog is stable, well-rounded, and eager to do the work, it's something that we can use a dog that's already in the home who train for them. And that's actually one of our more common things, especially with the owner trainer support program. It's either a pet turned service dog or somebody who got a puppy, didn't realize they needed a service dog, and then they're like, let's start this, and they'll get started on the process. It's a dog that they already have, but not just any dog can do it. A lot of dogs that get placed as ESAs, for example, our program has an ESA program as well. So for people who just need a companion in their home, but they want a really well-trained dog, we provide those as well. So quite a few of the dogs that we place in our ESA program versus our service dog program are dogs that may be perfect. They may be good with their tasks. They may be good with the people in the home, but they either didn't enjoy or just weren't enthusiastic enough about the work outside of the home. These are the type of dogs that end up being perfect emotional support animals, but not the other way around. So sometimes we can work out some minor temperament flaws or some minor character flaws with a lot of training and desensitization, but anything major we try to avoid, just really for the dog's sake, also for the handler, that they don't have to be more stressed when they go out. Our goal is going out with a service dog should be effortless. It should make your life easier and better all the time. It shouldn't be something that's a burden or something that's worrying you while you're out. And the way we ensure that is we start with the perfect dog. We don't really compromise, especially on dogs that we choose. We really try not to compromise on the dog's temperament and personality, because we want to start with the best chances of success. And statistically, starting with pets tend to just be slightly less suited, especially if they're older and they're used to, you know, being spoiled their whole life. Now we're trying to ask them to work, and it's a foreign concept for them. So we can do it, but it has to be the right dog, and it has to be a dog that wants to do it.
Okay, that's solid. Let's ask this question right here. Well, I got so deep into listening to what you were saying, I lost my question that I was going to ask you. But
I get that all the time now.
Yeah, it happens. In your training, is there a particular curriculum that you use, or do you go about it a different way?
That's a good question. The thing is that most training is all based, again, on that marker training system that we discussed before. So the dog is learning how to learn and learning how to problem solve. And so without giving too many details out, we basically go through a process of getting the dog to understand what the marker training is, that it's like a new language for the dog, that we can communicate with each other, and that if he tries behaviors, and we call it throwing a behavior, so trying something new, that if he tries enough, he's going to get the right answer and will be rewarded. So he's actually, again, trying to figure out what makes us tick and what pleases us as well. So, and that applies to both mobility dogs as well as psychiatric and other temperament issues. So we're going to have dogs of all types. They're all going to start with the same basics. They're going to learn all of their obedience on and off leash. They're going to learn marker training. They're going to learn something called shaping, which is teaching dogs new behaviors through small increments while they're trying something new. And then we're also going to be, at that point, deciding, depending upon what the dog is, what their tasks are going to be. So we'll take that base training and individually shape those tasks. And, of course, during the first period of time while we're doing their basic obedience, once they've completed that, then we'll start the public access work, which is getting them used to being out in shopping malls and grocery stores and all the places that service dogs need to go to.
Okay, I was giving you a second there to see if you were just taking a breath or turning a page.
Sorry, I do talk fast sometimes, don't I?
Yeah, you talk pretty fast, and what might have been 45 minutes is only taking 30. Well, that's okay.
A good service dog trainer. We can get a dog trained very fast.
One of the things I do want to add to Aaron there about our curriculum is we have created our own public access exam that goes above and beyond any other access test currently out there
for public viewing for service dogs. Ours is so extensive. We cover every situation or nearly every situation you can expect to encounter with your dog, not only to see how the dog would handle it, but to see how the handler will handle it as well. So the whole time we're going through the training process, we're training towards this exam to make sure that each dog is held to the same standards. So that helps us a lot with giving us that guideline of exactly what we want to train and what we want done to make sure that the dogs are coming out and are good quality dogs at the end of their training period.
Oh, good. So you guys basically have created your own PAT, and mm-hmm. you give that to the dogs that you train, and they have to pass that before they get the nod from you guys that, yes, this is one of our dogs.
Exactly. Yeah, everything, we won't just pass a dog just because we like the person as much as we probably do or because we like the dog. We really want the dog to be able to perform. We don't want somebody to go, I don't know if my dog can handle that. We want them to know that the dog can handle basically everything. We train like bus rides so that they're ready for a plane ride. We train loud areas so that they're ready to go, you know, to maybe some type of loud outside crowded event like a festival or a fair. Through our training process, the dog takes a public access exam 7 to 10 times. We do it at the beginning, and then we do it intermittently to gauge progress for each dog to make sure that they're progressing appropriately. And then that final exam for them to pass is with their handlers during team training. So the dog, we see it through the whole process. We're aiming for this goal the whole time, and we know that if a dog can pass this test, we know that the dog is going to be able to succeed as a service dog for long term, in the long term.
Okay, let's say I'm an owner trainer and I've trained my dog and I'm proud of my dog and my dog is just it. And I've had my dog in service for maybe 2, maybe 3 years. And I'm at a point where, you know, I've been getting way too many access challenges. And so I need to have my dog, and I'm using air quotes here, certified. Do you guys test other people's dogs?
We do. We don't call it certified because, as most people are aware, certification doesn't really mean much in the grand scheme of things. So we call it program backing. So if a dog, let's say an owner has been training it, if the dog has been trained the whole time and then they're like, hey, we wanted some program backing, we need a little bit of assistance, we do require that they go through at least 3 to 6 months of at least support training with us. So we have them start, you know, we'll evaluate the dog. As long as the dog is suitable, we will move into training through our owner trained support program. And after we've worked with the dog enough to get a really good general feel for the temperament and for the dog itself, then we will proceed with performing our public access exam for the dog. If the dog passes, then that's wonderful. They'll get our program backing, which basically means that they have 24/7 access to us in the case of an access issue or anything like that, because even the best trained dogs sometimes have access issues. But we only back dogs that are suitable. We won't just back a dog to back a dog because, one, it's our reputation on the line, and, two, it affects everyone out there. If a dog is aggressive or lunging or even just, you know, excited and barking, it can distract or interfere with the work of other service dogs or other people who are in the area. So we try to be very thorough when we work with people who have previously been training their dogs just to make sure we really know the dog. The public access exam is wonderful, and it gives us a really good gauge, but it is only a snapshot in time. So we want to at least a few so that we can really see that this is constant performance, that the dog is going to be doing it every time they go out.
So if, let's say, like you were saying, the dog was very poorly trained, that may take us a little bit longer with, we need to really get in there, we really need to get the dog trained. If the dog is showing aggression, if the dog is extremely disruptive and unable to get under control, or if the dog just really seems to hate working, we will not pass the dog. We are not going to put a dog out there and have it uncomfortable for a handler's sake. So if it has any of those issues, we will, if they would like, we will help them work to select a better suited dog and train through the process from the beginning with a better suited dog, just depending on if they're able to and if they're willing to. But it is an option as long as the dog is really a good dog. So even if the training's bad, we can fix bad training. Unfortunately, a lot of times we can't fix bad temperament flaws or bad socialization.
And I just wanted to add that with a lot of the owner-trainer team, sometimes we might see questions about legal access, like you're saying, access denial. What is the person's right? Yep, and that can vary from state to state. There is, of course, the nationwide legal rights, and then there's also some that may be slightly different or added in different states. And so the benefit of working with our program is that we can help you with that. If there's an access denial for something that you were confused by, then our program assists with understanding what the full laws are, having materials for education available with access denials and things like that, as, again, in addition to being on call as well. When you're an owner trainer, sometimes you just don't have all that information at hand, but working with our program, we can actually help educate you as well.
Okay. Let me take a moment here to do some housework. We are talking with Debbie Gerwitz and Aaron King from Destination Canine, which is a dog training organization. And you can call in at 646-668-2499. And if your computer signal or whatnot is giving you problems, you can call in and listen by calling that number. Or you could call in if you have a question for the ladies or a comment. Now, if you call in and you have a question or a comment, press the number 1 on your phone pad, and that will let me know that you actually have a question or a comment. That's kind of like raising your hand and alerting me. But if you just want to call in to listen, then that is fine. Do not press the 1 after you've dialed in, and I will know that you're just listening. So keep that in mind, and we've got a ways yet to go, but I did want to stick that in there. Usually I try to get that in the middle of the show. And so let's get back to the ladies. And here's a question for either or both of you, ladies. What is some of the determining factors in deciding to get a service dog?
So when looking at getting a service dog, if a person is, you know, kind of on the fence, what we ask them to think about is all the different ways that a service dog can impact your life, because a lot of people don't realize how much the dog is really involved in your life. They think it's going to be great, they'll have their dog with them. But especially for our alert type dogs, the dog needs to be there more than it's not. So some of the things, we have a lot of younger clients, so some of the things we might talk to them about is dating. You know, are you willing to take your dog on a date to, you know, meet the new cute boy? Are you going to have issues with people coming up to you in public and sometimes trying to pet your dog, sometimes barking at your dog? It just depends, you know, on the day of the week. But being, you know, are you willing to handle these things? Are you willing to, you know, there's access issues that sometimes come from it. Even things like being interrupted while you're shopping. We can go out, and what would be a 5-minute shopping trip for somebody else, somebody with a service dog, it's a 15 to 20 minute trip because you're answering questions and talking to people. So you need to make sure that you're prepared for all aspects of having that dog out and about with you. It's almost like having a toddler. So, you know, you have to be prepared when you take them out with their poop bags and their water bowl and whatever else you choose to carry around that day. But the other things we look at is the benefits. I mean, there are so many wonderful things that these dogs can do now that medical devices can't even touch at this point. Things like seizure alerting, which is something we can't train since we haven't identified what it is, but we do know that some dogs can do it naturally. So we talk about the benefits of, you know, you make more friends. People come up to you and they want to talk to you and they want to get to know more about you and your dog, generally in a very innocent and interested way to learn more about you. It opens a lot of doors, but sometimes it closes doors too. So that's really something to take into account, is that there's this whole big picture. We want to make sure that you are, you know, financially able to care for a dog. A lot of our clients are on disability or lower income. So we want to make sure that they have funds saved away to care for the dog in the event of an emergency or, you know, food day to day. And a lot of our clients make it happen. And that's one of the most wonderful things is people, you know, this is something that they want. This is something that they need. And they really work hard to make sure that it is something that they can afford and they can attain through, you know, saving programs and budgeting and things like that, because no matter how we cut it, dogs aren't cheap, and especially if you're looking at bigger dogs, a lot of common dogs are giant breeds like Newfoundlands and Mastiffs and Great Danes, and they eat a lot of food. So, you know, that's an additional thing that some people don't think about, is that there is a pretty high, sometimes monthly cost for having the dog. So we bring up a lot of points. We talk to them about, you know, educating the public as they're out and about, that they're going to get a lot of questions, and half the time they're extremely invasive, but people don't normally mean it that way. They're not asking what's wrong with you just to be rude. They're genuinely curious because it's something that they don't understand. So we teach them to be able to tell people, you know, this is why I have him and this is the wonderful thing that he does for me. So it's kind of a whole process that you need to evaluate every aspect of your life and make sure that this is something that you want to fit into your life, or if it's something you need. Some clients, you know, if they're diabetic and their sugars are out of control, the first time that they get released from the roller coaster of sugars is with the dog consistently alerting in advance so that they can measure out and take the right measures.
Okay, you mentioned something there that is really a catching point for a lot of people, and that is funding and the financing of the acquiring of a service dog, the training of a service dog, and as you mentioned, just the upkeep and keeping of a service dog. What do you teach your people? How do you work with your people in terms of the funding and financing of a service dog and the training of that service dog?
So we have quite a few different options. Some people are fortunate enough to be able to pay for the dog in full, but a majority of people are not. So if it's something that they're local to San Antonio, we have discount programs where the dog lives with them and it's part of our owner trained support program, that they can come to either a group or a private session that's scheduled regularly and get the attention that they need, but not quite the cost. So that's an advantage to being local to us. But we also assist our other clients who are all over the country with fundraising in various ways. We may hold contests. For example, we're getting ready to hold a contest for one of our poodles that we're training. We're doing a donation drive, and whoever donates the most money gets to choose how we're going to dye him.
As I mentioned before, I always have my service dog dyed. It's just kind of become a thing over the years that people recognize us and they know who we are. And so it's kind of fun to do some little, you know, a little bit of a something to stand out a little bit. So that's something. We have a contest that people can choose what color the dogs are going to be next as we dye them. And they get to kind of see the dog in public and, hey, I picked that style. So they can watch our updates on Facebook. We work, or we're starting to work with a lot of independent consulting type companies, like some that sell like nail wraps or makeup or things like that, and they'll hold fundraisers for us. So a certain percentage of their sales from these events go into the program for that particular client that is trying to raise money for their dog. We try to keep our costs as minimal as possible, which helps us out a lot. But we have quite a bit of cost associated just with having and training the dog up in the process. So we try to keep it as low as possible. We, at the end of the day, we do still have families to feed, but we barely make enough. We are really in this for, we want to help people and we want to make sure that our help is affordable. So we work on a sliding scale depending on, you know, income and things like that, to try to find exactly, you know, to make sure that the price works. But if it isn't, then it is something that, you know, we'd start these fundraisers to cover these total costs. And just kind of an idea, our program, we guarantee that each dog will have between 120 to 200 hours of formal training completed by the time they go home. So 120 of that is guaranteed to be public access training. And then anything above that could be tasks or in home, and these dogs live in our homes. So these dogs aren't put in kennels and then brought out for training. These dogs learn the whole process from a home. So just kind of an example, an average service dog trainer charges between 45 and 75 an hour, depending on where you are. So if you're going a full 200 hours, you're looking at $14,000 per dog. And that's just training. That's not even the food and stuff like that. We are less than that every time, and we include the food and stuff like that because we're willing to take the cut because we want to help make our dogs affordable. So this is just kind of, you know, that's kind of looking at that alone. I mean, our food costs, we have monthly food costs and everything like that. So one, we start by making it affordable, and two, we try to come up with very creative ways to help people raise money for, you know, the dog's gear and for the training and everything else that's involved with it. Veterinary care, for example, the dogs, we want all of our dogs, regardless of their job, to go out having hip x-rays. We want to make sure that we know that their x-rays are good, their hips are good before they do any type of work. So we go and we pay to have their hips checked, which again cuts out from that bottom line. But we try to come up with unique and creative different things that we can do, like, you know, contests or community fundraising. You know, we reach out to local areas and talk to, you know, businesses. Hey, can we put a donation jar on your counter to try to offset the cost for some of these people? It really helps to know that they have a program that's going to support them the whole way through. We don't just train the dog. We train the dog and we communicate with them, and we help them make sure that the money that they need to raise is attainable for them.
Well, that's super. I am looking at my clock, and I'm noticing that time is getting short in the hour, and I've got 1,000 different questions that I could ask, but what I want to make sure is that I give you an opportunity to put whatever on the table that you might have that's burning inside of your heart. You're doing this because you have a passion. And so I want to give you an opportunity to fill in some holes, to fill in the blanks of any question that I may not have asked that you would have liked to answer, and share that information with us now.
Thanks so much, Doc. One of the things we'd like to bring up that we're unique in our training style is that we do a lot of cross-training, And by that, I mean that many organizations may only train for a mobility dog or a wheelchair dog or a diabetic dog, but we have a lot of people within the service dog community that have crossover symptoms. Personally, I'm one of them. I may have a connective tissue disorder, but it has also affected my adrenal system, so sometimes I get anxiety attacks because my adrenal system's not working properly. And so my dog also performs things to help me with my anxiety. Currently, we are fundraising for one of our clients who is, she has Ehlers-Danlos like I do, but she also has diabetes. And so we're actually cross-training the dog to do both mobility tasks as well as diabetic alert. So, you know, it really depends. We have people with autism, anxiety, PTSD, again, with the blood sugars, the mobility disorders, and any of these combinations, if you have the right dog, you can cross-train. And we like to think that we are unique in that because a lot of people need multiple task training, but a lot of these organizations might not be able to do that. And because we are having a completely customized trained dog, unlike other programs that may have to do the same type of training for all of their dogs, having that smaller location and in-home training allows us to customize it to each dog and each human being. So we like to think that we can actually provide the best partner that that person needs. And so they're not having anything that they have to leave out because they have to choose one or the other disability. They can have it both ways.
Great, great. Now, the dogs and the handlers that come through your program, do you have any other requirements that some of the other programs have as far as that your dog is the only pet in the house or your dog is the only dog in the house or anything like that?
No, we actually don't have that requirement, but we will let a person know that if they're looking specifically for an alert dog, such as a diabetic alert dog, that the more animals you have in the home, the less likely the consistency is going to be with the alert. But there are ways to manage that as well, keeping the dog with you more often, giving them break cues so they can go play and be a dog and not be on task at the moment. We really feel it's important for a lot of our dogs to still have a social life, and it's not always reasonable for a lot of people to have a no-pet home. Many of them choose service dogs because they love animals, and this was a natural next step for them with their disability, and we would never tell somebody they have to get rid of one of their pets. That being said, we do interview our clients very thoroughly so that all the pets in the home do have to be, for example, friendly and whatnot. We don't want to have any behavioral issues around the other dogs either. So we do a full process of interviewing the client to make sure that their home is going to be able to welcome another pet as well.
Okay, that's super. Now, your organization is an LLC. It's not a not-for-profit organization. Yet, at the same time, you're operating as if you are a nonprofit organization as far as the fact that, you know, you're not money motivated.
Yeah, we like to joke that we're like the worst for-profit ever because we charge so little we almost sometimes don't break even because that's our goal is to just provide the dogs. So that's kind of been our running joke is we're just not always the best for-profit because we do act like a nonprofit, but it gives us a lot more opportunities than being a nonprofit offers at this time.
Okay. I'm tempted to ask you to follow that train of thought, but you stopped, and so I'm going to let that stop there.
No, I didn't know if you had a follow-up question, but I just wanted to, you know, we're working on becoming a nonprofit, but one of the things we currently do is we provide pet dog training to our community. So we charge a profit for the pet dog training to fund the service dog group. So it helps us to be able to do these for-profit things to benefit our service dog program. Our end goal is our 501c3, but unfortunately it's a costly and long process. So once we start working with lawyers and stuff to be able to really get this process moving, our goal is to become a nonprofit for the benefits like donations and things like that. because we know that people want to donate to nonprofits, so we want to give them that option.
Okay, and I'll just tell you this on air, and you could follow up off air if you'd like some guidance on that. I am sure the great folks at St. Bernard Service Dog Academy can help you through that. Very, very, very close to them, as of course we know that's me.
That would be wonderful. It'd be nice to have somebody who knows that the process already to help guide us.
Yes, we have done the process, and that's part of our reasons for being is to help establish other good folks out there to do the work that we're passionate about doing. Now, having said that and looking at my clock here, I want to ask this question that might be important to other programs that may be listening. Do you guys ever get to the point where you might say to a potential client, you know what, we have this other agency out here that we feel like might be better for you to work with, and do y'all refer to other agencies, or do y'all try and accommodate basically everybody that comes in that might need a service dog?
We do refer out from time to time. Some of the biggest examples are full hearing dogs for people who are completely deaf or have a complete loss of hearing, or guide dogs for people who have a complete loss of vision. Because those programs just tend to be more specialized, and the programs exist already. We already have an amazing guide program here in Texas that we like to refer to, as well as an amazing hearing program here, that these dogs are, you know, raised from puppies to do these things. And because of the intense level of training, especially for a guide dog, sometimes it's just more beneficial to go with, this is a program that this is all they do is guide dogs. So they're the leaders in our industry for this type of service dog. There are other times where a client may really need, they want owner trained support, but they really need something in person where they're too far away, because we do Skype for a lot of our further away clients, but there are some times that they just maybe don't learn well from the Skype process, or they just prefer to have somebody in person. So then we work with our networks to find someone local in their area as best we can who can assist them with the training hands-on and in-person, but likely they'll still consult with us from time to time for things as well. But we are open. We like to refer to good programs, but we're picky on programs because we want them to get the same level of care with the other programs that they would get with us. So we choose our programs carefully, but we will refer out if that's what is in the best interest of the client.
Okay, that is special and very, very sweet. And now as I'm looking at the clock, I am going to give you an opportunity for some last words, and I'm going to alert the listeners that if you have a question or comment, it is now time to call in and press that number one. And you call in at 646-668-2499. And then once you're into the system and in queue, press the number one on your phone keypad, and that lets me know that you have a question or a comment. So back to you, ladies, to get your last word before and if there's any questions or comments. Go ahead.
Well, first, we'd really like to thank you so much for this time on air. We would love to answer any questions, not only on the show, but if someone has some questions about the service dog training process or if a service dog might help them, we really encourage them to contact us through our Facebook Messenger. We also have our email through our website as well. And, of course, our phone number, which is 210-541-BARK. And that's 210-541. I'm sorry. Wait a night. 541 Park. It's also 2275. Goodness, it's late here for me. But we're happy to help anybody that has any questions about this. And if for some reason you can't get a hold of us, please leave a message. We might be with a client at the time, and we will get right back with you.
Okay,
I'd like
that's
to
great.
Add if we have a second. Sorry. I was just going to say, I just wanted to add again, thank you so much for the opportunity. And even if somebody is contemplating and they're like, we don't know, we'll help you work through the process to make the decision. And sometimes through talking to clients, they decide that they aren't ready yet, and that is absolutely okay. We want to guide you through the process and help you decide exactly what you need specifically for you and what is best for you. It's not, you know, we're not going to try to talk you into getting a service dog so that we bring money in. We just want you to be happy and to be successful, whether that be with a service dog or without a service dog at this time. It's up to the client completely, but we're more than happy to help you make that determination or help you come up with questions to ask your doctor if you're not sure if it's something that you are disabled or if you qualify for a service dog.
Well, how special is that? That is great. That is great. And let me say that I am so happy to have you ladies online with me tonight. And this particular show will be saved and archived as a podcast so that you can send people to listen to it. And, you know, you can use it as a promo piece or what have you if people are asking about your organization. And there will be a place where there can be comments added and things like that underneath this program. And you can feel free to write a comment of your phone number, your contact information, and all that under the program in the contact area, in the comment area. And that way people can see what they might not have taken time to write down if they heard. So
fantastic.
I just wanted to let you know that. So
thank you so much.
There you go. And now, having said all that and looking at my switchboard, we do have some callers, but I don't have any callers that have pressed a number one. So that lets me know that nobody has a question or a comment, that you are just listening on your phone. Now, if I am wrong in that, please, please, please press the number one on your keypad, and that lets me know that you indeed have a question or comment. I'm going to give you a couple moments to do that. And while I give those couple of moments, I'll talk about tomorrow's show, and tomorrow we will be interviewing a very special lady by the name of Anne Wicklund, and she is the author of several different books. Her and her husband have a service dog for her husband. It's a hearing service dog, and so they are really, really big in the hearing and the hearing alert and those kind of things. So you'll want to come out and you'll want to tune in and listen to that. She'll be pitching her last book, which is a handbook on service dogs. And I've read it. It's a really good book. It's an easy read. And it is chock full of information. And this show is all about providing a platform for organizations to come before you and to share information with you that you may need and to give you encouragement that you are not alone and there's a whole community behind you. So having said that and seeing that my switchboard is not lighting up, I'm going to thank you for listening tonight and thanking my guest again. And I'm going to ask you, come back tomorrow, 8 o'clock, and we will do it all over again. And we sure appreciate you listening. We sure appreciate you sharing us with your friends and your family so that our audience grows. And please, by all means, let us know the different topics you might want to hear, and let us know the different professionals that you might want to hear from, and we'll see if we can't get them on. God bless you. Be good to yourself, and love to everyone.